Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my fine friends. Welcome to Rahalastapa 2021. I've just got a feeling that everything's going to be okay this year. That's just my feeling. Lockdown 3, the quickening. This week we are talking to Alexis Sale. We did this one just before Christmas. Tried to speculate how Brexit would affect the UK. I predicted a bomb site looking out the window. It's looking okay. I was wrong. I misjudged it. Well done, Boris. You're doing a great job. Hope you're enjoying these podcasts. If you're watching or listening to this on the 6th or 7th of January 2021, good news. You can get the Emergency Questions 1001 Conversation Starters for Every Occasion on Kindle or ebook for just 99p. There's over 1,000 questions in here. There's some bonus ones in this edition. And that will keep you going all the way through lockdown, however long it may be. You can ask them to friends, you can ask them to family, you can ask them to yourself whilst playing snooker against yourself, whatever you like. My Twitch channel will continue through lockdown, twitch.tv/RKHerring. Monday's snooker, Wednesdays we record Rahalastapas usually. Thursday we do Twitcher fun usually, lots of puppet-based fun and japes and sketches and all sorts of stuff. And we may add a few more things to the roster as we're going through. There's occasional live stone clearing. We were playing video games and all sorts of stuff. You never know, doing film commentaries. They may come back for lockdown. We shall see, my fine friend. Please support us if you can. If you can't afford to, which is understandable at this difficult time, then just listening to the podcast with ads or just telling your friends. The reason we keep it free is so that you can all enjoy it. If you have any spare money, 99p, that would help. Or become a monthly badger, gofasterstrike.com/badges. You know how it works. Let's crack on and welcome the very special guest, second time of asking, the Rahalastapa with the wonderful Alex E. Sale. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who's accidentally drinking peanut, pecan, maple and vanilla milk stout. Cheers, it's Richard Herring. Hello, everyone. I've just grabbed a beer out of the fridge. I thought it was a beer, but you know, with this delivery beer system that we sometimes have advertising our podcast, they're all fancy cans. And this one's called Fairy Tale of Beer of Brew New York. And I thought that's going to be a nice Christmassy drink. And it's a crazy stout that I will nurse throughout this podcast. Welcome, anyway, to Richard Herring's Let's Start 2021 podcast. Thank God 2020 is over. But let's face it, 2021, if you're listening to the podcast, we're still in 2020 as we speak. There's still a week for terrible things to go wrong. Let's face it, 2021 is definitely going to be worse than 2020. So I don't know why we're glad to leave it behind. But I was hanging around with everyone in Tier 4 today. I'm very proud that I've been up to Tier 4. I was been Tier 3 for a while. I didn't even know there was a Tier 4, but I've been promoted up there to Executive Class Tier 4. There's a few other people in with me. They call it Rehlerstapel, all those guys, the ones that are able to speak. It's a very exciting time because we are. I'm recording on the 23rd of December, and as I record, we still do not know what is going to happen with Brexit, which is what, 8 days away. So you'll be listening to this, and you will know if you're at home listening to the podcast, you will know what's happening. But we do not know what's happening. I might try and see if my guest can guess when he comes on. All I know is that we're currently living on a plague island. That's what all the foreign newspapers are saying about us. Oh, that's hadn't loaded up the pictures right. I'll put that back. I've just put up a picture of a deep fried penis, which probably is that. Actually, that's quite apt for Brexit. I'll leave it up. All we had to do to stop immigrants was infect ourselves with plague, it turns out. So we've been through all this palaver for nothing. If we'd just given each other plague, it would have been cheaper. It would have been less self-destructive. Many of us would have died, but at least we'd have died pure and British with no immigrants would have wanted to come. We got the super spreading virus now. That's the new thing that's just come in. We've got no deal Brexit possibly coming up. We've got our own super version of the virus. It feels like God doesn't really like the UK. I don't want to be one of those Americans who says God's punishing us, but it feels like God's punishing us for something. And the problem with being from the UK and being English in particular is it's very difficult to pin down what that thing might be. It could be anything, couldn't it? It could be a myriad of things. Maybe it's just everything. God's gone, fuck it, we've had enough. Let's really fuck them up. Well, look, I hope you've enjoyed 2020, at least what's been going out online. I've had quite a nice time and it's been quite creative. I feel it's gone all right. We have produced a lot of content for you here on this channel, including a deep fried penis, a picture of a deep fried penis behind me right now. If you feel you've enjoyed that and happy to have had it for free, but have some spare money, why not consider becoming a monthly badger? Go fasterstripe.com/badges. £3 a month. You can pay more if you want, and you get access to backstage interviews and all sorts of stuff. And stand-up shows, loads of extras. But more importantly, that money gets channeled back in. And I'm hoping in 2021 we can start making some of the more adventurous and ambitious projects and doing sketches that we're filming outside for my stupid puppet show. And who knows what will be. So support us if you can. But if you can't afford to, then you're welcome to listen. And if you don't want to, you're welcome to listen or watch for free. Maybe tell your friends about all this stuff. That'd be nice. Or just keep it yourself, like you always have. Anyway, I'm very delighted to welcome back a guest who we last had on, I can't believe, 6.5 years ago, nearly 7 years ago, who was on this podcast. He is probably best known as the heckler, sort of political heckler in a crowd in Walcott. That is why we're all here tonight to see him. Will you please welcome the amazing king of comedy, Alexi Sale. Here he is. Hello, Alexi.
Hi, Richard. Hi.
It's lovely. Thanks so much for doing this. So welcome. Close to Christmas.
Yeah.
When I know you're busy in department stores.
Yeah.
So it's nice of you to give up your time.
Yeah.
So have you ever played Santa or anything?
I did a charity photo shoot for kids' companies. Remember them? It kind of ended in ignominy. I dressed up as Santa. Well, of course, there's a bit. You can swear on this, can't you? It's the internet.
Yeah, you can say anything you like.
Well, there's a bit I used to do, I did in Edinburgh in 2017, about I was walking through King's Cross fairly late at night and a woman called me a Santa Claus-faced motherfucker. And and also a couple of African guys walking towards me, excuse me, but they suddenly started going, Santa, Santa.
I think you're a bit. There's got to be a great drama of like a very angry Santa Claus. I mean, Santa Claus must be angry.
My parents always were very keen to take me to see Santa at Lewis's department store, and they were communists. But I always thought it was because they thought that Santa was a lot like Stalin. You know, they both had red uniforms, and they kind of generated their wealth from a system of slave labor, you know, both. So I thought that they were the kind of northern autocrats.
It is communism. Ideally, you know, Christmas should be communism, but unfortunately the rich kids get better presents for some reason from Santa. But he does give to all the children. So in a way, he's the first communist, maybe.
How far can we push this?
So what do you remember about Walcott?
Walcott
was your first TV job, I think.
I think it was very, very early on, and it was still, I think I was still at the Comedy Store, and there was a casting director, she's dead, I can't remember her name, but she cast, Walcott was this detective thing where the unbelievable kind of twist in it was that Walcott himself was black. Right. And there was a scene in a market, I think it was Ridley Road Market, and Keith Allen was also in it, and he was a fascist making a speech, and I heckled him, and it was just the first time I'd ever done any telly, really. So I found it really thrilling, and also Keith being a very sort of, he's sort of much more interested in people. I remember at one point he was in some house. And he said, Lex, come in here. They've got a goose. I can remember. Which is very kind of Keith Allen. Anyway, so.
Is it a living goose or a dead goose?
I thought it was a living goose. I think it was a pet goose, yeah. And I remember a lot about Walcott. It seemed, because I think it was the first telly that I ever did, it seemed amazing and magical and, you know.
Yeah. Well, we all remember you from it. I don't remember that series, but,
No.
If I'd known you were in it, I would have watched it. That's the irony, but there we go. Let's talk about this because you're on my podcast 6.5 years ago, and I can't believe how much time has passed that quickly because it doesn't feel like that long. But you've now got into, it's just 6 years later, you've decided to get into your own, the world of online entertainment, which I presume is down to 2020 generally. You've had quite a roller coaster. In that you started 2020 on tour.
Yeah. And was two-thirds of the way through the tour when it...
Oh, you're two-thirds.
When it got cancelled.
So what was that like? What was... Because you were doing... Was Liverpool your last...
Yeah,
you were doing
five nights in Liverpool.
Yeah.
And then...
You got them all done, did you? Did you get all the gigs?
They finished on the Saturday and then we drove home overnight and then... In some ways, it's like I've never... It's nothing pleases me more than cancelling a gig. I mean, it was... It was a very, you know, I think that's quite a strong strain in comedians that they're always, if you can cancel a gig on legitimate grounds, you always will, really. So, I mean, I think we were supposed to be doing Sheffield and then the promoter in the end actually pulled it. And then that was the first week, you know, when Johnson said, don't go to theatres. And then lockdown came. And I also had coronavirus out of myself. I was okay for that first week when we got back, and then I just fell off a cliff for about a week. I was very ill.
So you lost your sense of smell and taste and everything? Has that come back? Because the last time I heard you talking about it, no.
It's come back about kind of 50%, I think. But
really?
Not at all, completely, no.
Right. So that, I mean, again, a lot of people, it's obviously, thank goodness you're okay, and as some people didn't get through it. But that's the kind of side of it that people aren't really concentrating on, is it? One of my friends has been ill practically the whole of the year, basically.
Really?
It's not. Yeah, he was in hospital for a bit, but at home he's just unable to. I think he's a bit better now, but he was just for months unable to do anything. Mm. You know, and it's sort of very weird the way it affects people differently. But then is the prognosis that your taste and smell will come back?
I've never consulted anybody about it. Nobody knows, basically. I mean, I think that generally it does. I mean, it's come back. It came back like 25% and then 50%, but it's kind of stalled since then. So, I guess it'll come back at some point, but maybe it won't. I don't know.
So I hope it does. The tour was your first stand-up show for a little while. Was it your first tour?
Yeah,
tour show for
I think that's 7 years. Yeah, I've never quite believed my own PR whether that's true. I make stuff.
So was it? Were you enjoying the tour, or was it kind of like, because it's not, you know, it is nice to get gigs cancelled. That's not your problem. I had a couple cancelled because of the weather last year.
Yeah, it was. It was amazing. It was an amazing show, and it perfectly. I mean, Brian Logan in The Guardian, basically, you know, he sort of voted it kind of best, one of the best stand-ups
this year.
And he was right, really. And it perfectly and brilliantly summed up kind of late, you know, December 2019, you know, January, February 2020. I mean, if you really wanted to capture the essence of that period, then you could have seen my show and you would go, this is amazing. This man has bottled the feeling of an era of the kind of post-Corbyn, you know, kind of 2020s. And this, what could come along that could possibly make this irrelevant? What conceivable world-changing event could happen that make this completely fucking pointless? All this work, all this fucking workshopping material.
Yeah,
you know. So yeah, that will never. But it did. It beautifully captured January 2020.
It's such an unusual thing to happen. Obviously, like, and it must be annoying to be two thirds of the way through. You're probably just getting to the point where you're getting into sort of profit on a tour. You're in profit, but you know the last third is where you make your money. Basically.
Yeah, so. I mean, and it was also. I kind of had an idea that I wanted to play kind of mediums. I was sort of like, I played five nights in Liverpool in a 500 seater. But I think given the response to the tour, I would have gone out this autumn and probably played the bigger rooms, played the south. I would have, because there's large parts of the country that because I was doing multiple nights, getting on a bit. So I couldn't face. So it was like a 30-day tour, but we didn't go to Wales, we didn't go to the North East, we didn't go to Scotland. And so I think what we would have done in the autumn was we'd have played the big, you know, the 2,000 seaters. I would have done a tour.
Right.
And they would have sold out, I think, you know. And
That's good. Well, hopefully you'll be able to do it. I mean, is it something you know, as I get older, I'm feeling like, you know, I'm less inclined to go and see, you know, do even, it's usually 50 dates or something I would do. It feels less exciting as an idea and more irritating. But you seem to have kind of got back into stand-up and got the bit between your teeth and...
I would do a maximum of about 30 dates, I think, on a tour. Hopefully, you know, large, you know, so enough people would come and see me, really, in large venues. But, yeah, I mean, I can't... The sort of the driving and all, that's the bit I can't... You know, on the last tour, we got the train most of the places and stuff, stayed overnight, you know, rather than those kind of late-night drives back to London. So, it was going really well. And the show, you know, the show had really cohered in a way that it was my favorite stand-up. I think I'd done like Edinburgh in 2017 and that was good, but there was bits of it that I wasn't completely happy with, but this I'd learned from that, and I'd found a way to really do, you know, I think it was something very special really in there.
Yeah, well, as you say, top 10 shows of The Guardian. That's helped a bit by all the other shows being cancelled, Alexei.
Yeah.
But it's still...
I did think that. I thought, yeah, this is a kind of... Because, what's he going to choose from? There's been fuck all, really. I don't know where I would have been, what he would have said if, yeah, you know, all the
stuff. Well, often people forget. You know, the thing is, he saw you in February, you'd have, or March, or January or February, whatever he saw you. You know, people come to the end of the year and they forget. Forget the stuff they seen in the beginning. So it's good to do that.
Basically, his comedy year ended in March, so...
yeah. So was the move into podcasts as a result of, was it entirely a result of not having any live work, or was it something you'd sort of been planning to do anyway?
I've been toying with the idea for years, but never really found a way to do it, I think. And also it is, you know, I've struggled with the idea. You know, I mean, my, you know, working pattern was that I did something. It was broadcast by a channel, which gave it authority, and they paid me a lot of money to do it. And so this kind of podcast where you're fighting with every other, you know, influencers fucking giving fucking makeup demonstration. You know, there's no authority. You have no authority. Also, you pay. The first time I had a meeting with, I honestly didn't know, a few years ago I had a meeting with some people who, you know, was talking about a podcast, and I was like, I pay you. I pay money to give my shit away. Where's the sense in that, really? So it's taken me a long time to accommodate myself to that, really. I don't know whether it would be happening, but I think I've been slowly coming around to it.
Sure.
So, yeah, and also, but it was meeting, Talal, who does everything for me, really. Talal Karkuti, who is a comedian himself and a podcaster. And he was the one who made it all possible for me.
I think it really suits you. I've been doing it, obviously, for 12 years.
Yeah.
And I've never paid to do it. I didn't get paid for a long time.
Yeah.
I am now, you know, making, I could make a living from just podcasting now, I think. So it's kind of interesting that that's happened. But what appealed to me, which I always thought, you know, I always thought you'd be good for this, and I think it's proving that you are, even though it's quite early days for your podcast, but it's very good. It's just that, you know, it's you're in control of it all. So, you know, you are owning the means of production.
Yeah.
You're producing what you want to do. It feels to me, I know it has changed, and I know it has become a lot more commercialized than people bringing in the big names and trying to make lots of money from it. But if you're just doing what you want to do, and your podcast, I think, you know, almost by your own admission, it's quite political, at least a couple of the episodes are, and you kind of almost want to put people off listening to it because you're trying out new material.
Yeah.
So yeah. A lot of people are going to get turned up. Well, not a lot of people, but some people, maybe not many Alexis L fans, to be fair, but because the political nature of it is, fairly overt.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, no, I've loved what I've done so far, the three or four, whatever it is that I've done so far, I've absolutely loved. And there's also this other thing that we do, which is these bike rides as well, which are really lovely. I think they're really, really nice. Yeah.
Well, the bike ride one is great. That's on YouTube. If you just look for Alexi's channel, just Google Alexi Sale, you'll find both of these things very easily. It's very relaxing, the bike. I do a podcast where I clear stones off a field, or walk around a field and clear stones off it. So.
Yeah.
And people use it to go to sleep to its main function. But it's very relaxing, but also it's beautifully filmed. The filming works well. So there's a camera on you and a camera on where you're going. So we get to see a bit of London, but you're also just chatting away. And what you're good at, and there is one of your episode of your podcast where you're interviewing people, but you're just basically talking to yourself and soliloquizing. And you're very good at that. That's a hard thing to do, I think,
It came very, it did come very easily and naturally to me. So yeah, there's been no, you know, there's no pressure. You know, I like that there's no pressure and stuff. And yeah, and the bike rides, I mean, I think they are lovely. They are really meditative, and I'm very pleased with them. We did one yesterday, the day before, and again, I think it's
I think though, you know, also it's. I mean, the production values are very high, I think, especially for YouTube. And
thanks to Lau.
You know, but it almost, that's a you know, if Bob Mortimer can go fishing,
yeah.
It's a TV show of you cycling around and just having a chat with yourself.
Yeah.
It's kind of beautiful. And you try, you know, you cycle slowly. It's not like, you don't wear a helmet, do you? You wear a hat. No.
Wear a hat. Yeah.
Yeah, just to protect you if you come off.
Yeah.
You're going pretty slowly. I think you'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I can go faster.
Yeah.
But
well, you're a very patient bike rider. If it was me, there was a bit where people were walking in the cycle lane, you just went round them quite politely.
Yeah.
I'd have been shouting at them.
Well, interestingly enough, I talk about that on this on this bike ride that we did on Tuesday. There's a podcast I really like. There's only three of them, I think, which is called Ogmios Zen Taxi Driver, which is this guy, this battle rapper driving around sort of mostly Stoke Newington and Green Lanes and stuff, but in a very Zen way. And it's very funny, but it's also, you know, I think that there is a way to, I have myself been trying to drive and cycle in a considerate and sort of Zen way the last few years, because I think I was a shouter and a hooter and a honker and particularly being aggressive with people when I'm on a bike, which is like fucking stupid when you think about how, you know, arguing with a 40 ton lorry when you're on a, when you're on a lilac bike. And, I have tried to ride in a more considerate way, and it's very good for you, I think, to do that.
Yeah, I think but then it's very good to watch. It's calming to watch, but also because I'm presuming you haven't really thought that much ahead. You drive past Boris Johnson's old house, and you have some anecdotes about that and about him. And it's just things occur to you as you're going, you know, drive down by the canal, which is lovely to watch. And interesting to see all the people you're part. I mean, I worry you're going to, it's a bit like Google Maps, where the people who get caught up in your camera might be up to something that they shouldn't be doing, and you might reveal what they're doing.
Yes, but. I think it would be impossible to. It must be very difficult for people to have affairs these days. You basically have to, because you are, you're going to get caught up in somebody's podcast, aren't you, really? It's virtually impossible to remain hidden, I think, these days. I think that, you know, I'm not somebody who particularly wants to put my life, I mean, I'm more accommodated with it now than I used to be, but I'm still not somebody who has that compulsion to share their life with the world, really. And so it'd be interesting to see how long, you know, I don't want to kind of tell every story I've got, you know, do every anecdote. And so it'd be quite interesting to see how long I can keep doing like the bike rides.
I sort of feel it works on every level, though. I think, you know, it would be just enjoyable watching you cycle around, not talking.
Yeah.
The talking's an extra level, it's sort of fascinating just to see, you know, a place. It doesn't have to be, obviously you're in London, so it's London. But it could be anywhere. You could take this anywhere you wanted. You could go around the world with it, and it's quite a pleasant way to do it.
When the world eases a bit, that we'll go to like Liverpool and Hastings and places.
It's just interesting how the technology is that good that you can stick a camera, two cameras on a bike, and it can come out that well. It's lovely, very well produced, as is your podcast. I did enjoy the one. I mean, I've enjoyed all of them, and as always, it's challenging stuff and interesting stuff. And if you're a fan of Keir Starmer, you might not want to tune in. Maybe you will. I mean, I'm not a fan of any of them. I don't mind him as much as you mind him, but I find it's very funny. And I think as long as comedians are being funny about politicians, which you always are, I think with you, you've always had a sense of. You've always mocked yourself as well when politics gets into comedy, sometimes it can be all right, but you know, have a word with yourself. But you obviously feel very strongly about your own views, but you're always prepared. You've always been prepared to mock yourself.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think people get more right wing as they get older, and I mean, there was no further left for you to go, really, when you started out, was there? So I don't think you have got more right wing, but there was a very the lovely podcast, which I hope you'll do more stuff like this as well, where you talk to David Renwick and Andrew Marshall. And I love the fact you got his name wrong every single time you said it. And I love the fact that he corrected you, because I would have called him David Renwick. But you worked with him for a long time, so
I don't know if that's been
bubbling under for 30 years. Where he just went, it's Renwick, Alexei. But you talked about Woods Apocalypse, but also all the stuff you guys, the three of you, did together, which is a sort of, it's not a forgotten conglomeration of people, but because you've worked with so many people, I'd kind of forgotten that you'd had so much to do with David Renwick and Andrew Marshall, who obviously have gone on to great success, as you have independently. Mm. But talking about Whoops Apocalypse, which was a series and a movie, and the sketch show you did with those guys as well.
Yeah.
So it's if you're interested in those shows, it's well worth listening to.
Yeah. Well, and again, that is one of the liberating things about podcasts. You can just, you can the first two are intensely political about the kind of minutiae of left wing politics, and then the next ones are kind of comedy fans edition. And I don't know whether people who are interested in the former will listen to but it doesn't matter, does it?
Really? I mean, you pick and choose.
Yeah,
I think it's, but also people like you're trying out material. There's some funny stuff. I discovered that you're into, which I should have known maybe before, that you're into Chinese martial arts.
Yeah, I was just aware of. I was doing a class just before this.
And I love the bit where you have a go at the things that people inevitably say to you as a result of that, which I won't. I was very tempted to pretend I hadn't listened and just do it to you. But see how you reacted. But so you're finding comedy out of those little things. When did you get into Chinese martial arts?
How long I've done martial arts over the years, on and off, but always before I've had a personal, I've had a teacher really. So you progress faster, but it's not, you miss out on the group experience. But I talk about this in my stand-up show, but in late 2015, I had a severe autoimmune condition. I have this condition called lichen planus. Basically, my brain kind of exploded in late 2015, and I lost my balance and my sight. And it took a while to come back. And so a friend of mine did Tai Chi Kung Fu, and I'd been to a few classes before of the kind of the fighting style. But I said to her, do you do kind of Tai Chi, in your group? And she said, yeah. And so I signed on really. But it was also the first time, where I'd been with a group of people, and it was just a transformative experience, to be in a class and to be the worst in the class, by far, and the oldest. But I feel it's tremendous affection really for everybody in the group. And, it's been really amazing for me.
So it's a meditative thing as much as anything, but it's obviously a self, you can presume.
You get a lot of, Tai Chi is often kind of denatured in the West particularly. So if you can do like what they call Yang style short form, in a village hall and not realize that it is a martial art. But in fact, even though you're doing, this gesture, you can do it as a kind of exercise, but it's also about getting under somebody's chin and pulling their head off, So, and these are kind of, poking people's eyes out and stuff. So it is both a kind of movement in meditation, but it's also about really seriously fucking people up.
And is it about control? Because, you've had, if you read your biogs and even on your own page, you talk about, losing, moving on from places because you tried to strangle someone or you've been in a fight with someone. And so was there an element of you that was genuinely angry when you were younger that you're managing to control, or do you think you always had it under control?
I think a lot of that was, the people I was fighting with were tough. It wasn't like I don't think I was ever really a genuine hard case, I was never really angry.
You're an intimidating, the act is an a confident act, and you would imagine. And like when you were introducing people at the Comedy Store, and then if they were bad, and we talked about that last time, you would just say how shit they were.
Yeah.
How shit they were afterwards, which is great in a lot of ways, but that must have riled a lot of people up.
I imagine so. It was, retrospect, but never. I think it was tremendously cruel, but it was, it was the spirit of the times partly, and it was what made the show work really. Sure. And I do have, there is that kind of, I think when I got in front of an audience, I was fearless, really. So, you know, it was a kind of demonic possession, really, that I would do.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have the strength of 10.
Because you're very, ballerinas. You are, in reality, you you know, I obviously didn't know you back in the 80s, but I've met you a few times and heard you talking on other things. And you're a very sensitive and thoughtful, educated man. Yeah. And it's, you know, are people in a Tai Chi class, are people going, is that Alexei Sale? Do they know who you are? And are they kind of freaked out?
I mean, most of them are foreign of one kind or another, really. Right. So they don't really. And then a lot of them are young. So they also, I don't really impinge. I think one of the things that had probably stopped me doing stuff before was that idea, you know, well, people can't see Alexei Sale failing to do golden cockerel stands on one leg, you know. I mean, then it's kind of like all that stuff fell away somehow, and I didn't care about being ridiculous or incompetent, you know. And it's partly, I suppose, about aging maybe, but sure. all that kind of ego disappeared, really. So I don't know what they think. Nobody. It's not. It's also not. You know, you're very much a. I'm very much a junior in that setup. You know, I mean, I've been doing it for 4.5 years, so I'm, fairly senior now in a way. But I'm still not. There's everybody. Nearly everybody is better than me in the class. Or everybody really is better than me.
So. At the end of the session, just sort of fight out, see who's the toughest and who could. So you got the
packing order. No, we don't. Well, especially not. You can't spar or anything at the moment. You know, it's all forbidden.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Oh, dear. Good. Well, it's all very interesting. We'll move on from the podcast, but, you know, what strikes me within the podcast is that, you know, I try to remain like open-minded about everything and take the piss out of everyone. But with the left, it sort of feels that your ire is more at Keir Starmer than it is at Boris Johnson.
Yeah,
and
well,
do you think
that
the problem with the left? I mean, you talk about that idea of the. There's a very funny anecdote you tell about Tony Benn going to a meeting on the day of 9/11, yeah. And they spend an hour discussing the pamphlets they've got coming out, and they don't discuss.
He's going to make a tea.
Should we talk about what's
happening?
And do you think that's the problem with the left, that they're more interested in fighting each other? Because it's, you know, it's gone one way or the other, hasn't it? It's either people were furious that on the left, if we're talking Labour and the communism to an extent, I suppose, people were either furious with Jeremy Corbyn because they thought that he was never going to win, or they're furious with Keir Starmer. And, you know, and those two, it's so divided. I think you talk about... I think they probably should divide.
Oh,
but will we ever win? Will the left ever win if we're more interested in fighting each other than we are in fighting.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would challenge the contention really that Keir Starmer is in any way on the left. I mean, I think that he's, you know, he's acting very much in the interests of, you know, the power, you know, what they call in Spain, el poder, you know, the power. I think, and whether, but yeah, it's obviously fissipariousness, you know, the kind of splitting off of the left is a perennial problem, really. I mean, I always like the story. There was, I remember when I was like teenager in Liverpool, there was in Birkenhead, there was five syndicalists, which is a kind of form of anarchism, you know, and they were all poor and they got money together to go like in a van to a conference in London. And on the way, they had a split. Three of them went one way and two went, you know, like only two of them went to the conference in the end, and the others formed a faction that was called, you know, the Syndicalists of Birkenhead, you know, rather than Birkenhead Syndicalists. Yeah. I mean, that is a problem on the left, and I don't know. It's something that's always been a staple of my work, so it's you know, it's always stuff I've gone on about. It is. And I don't know what you do about it, really. But it is, I mean, I think for me, the 5 years have been revelatory, really, that I always knew. And I mean, in a way, it's been, artistically, it's been very good for me. And it's also helped me very much identify an audience, I think. But sure. You know, the kind of rise of Corbyn and then the campaign of vilification, the lies that came at him, you know, from every kind of, you know, I mean, absolutely untrue, absolute lies, absolute distortions of truth that, you know, came out, that I found it truly shocking how much, and whether it's always been the case or whether this is something new, but how much of, you know, how, to what extent the game is rigged, really, that, you know, and it comes at you not only from the people that you think are your enemies, but sometimes people who you thought were kind of allies and stuff. And it's just been, it is so wrong, the way that Corbyn was treated, the sneering attitude of the media and then the lies that were told about him, that I found it shocking, really. But it's also caused me to try and, you know, re-engage in politics, really, and to try and find a way through. And I don't know what one of the problems is, you know, I mean, I think I talk about this a bit, that that, you know, because people on the left are the kind of reverse of what is the kind of media, was the media reputation. So they are the good people. They're the kind people. They generally often work in the caring services, you know, doctors, nurses, teachers, you know, social workers, all that stuff. And they are profoundly good, really. And this is, which is kind of a problem, really, because they believe in the decency, I think, partly of people, which is a fucking profound mistake to think that human beings are essentially decent, you know, is, yeah. And so they're constantly shocked when somebody, you know, like they, you know, they thought, they believed Starmer when he said he was going to be the unity candidate and he was going to be continuity Corbynism. He was fucking lying through his lying tiny little teeth, but they kind of voted for him, and they're like, then they're like, oh, I didn't think that'd happen, you know. And I have no, you know, the left is tremendously flawed, partly because, precisely because of their decency. And I don't know how you, but I hate losing, really. And so I don't.
Yeah, well, I just think they're never, there's being right. And I think, you know, you are, for my money, you're right about a lot of things. But being correct isn't any use if you spend your whole life not having any power to do it.
No, I guess, no, but it's, I mean, I think that, you know, yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, but it's like, at the moment, if you're left wing, if you're basically, you know, somebody who opposed the war in Iraq and all that shit, then you've got no representation. At least if you had a party, that, you know, had represented your views, at least you'd have that. Rather than the stinking fucking corrupt cesspit that is the fucking Labour Party.
But that's what I mean. So you're so angry with the Labour Party, but the Conservative Party is a lot worse. And because Labour, the left and the communists and the left wing are all fighting, the Conservatives could just get on and are going, you know, anything is left wing compared to the way the Tory Party is going at the moment.
Well,
so, you know, personally, I would just prefer anything.
Maybe, I suppose so. Although the great black American socialist W.E.B. Du Bois, when somebody said about voting for the lesser of two evils, he said there aren't two evils. There's one evil. It's got two parties. And so I sort of kind of think that more, really, that, you know, Starmer and fucking Gordon Brown, and now seems to be his BFF. what's the fucking difference?
You know, I think the thing is that the actual, all the things we're worried about at the moment aren't, in the long run, are not going to be as important as the environment. And I think the environmental issues are going to actually throw the world into such chaos that all of this will be irrelevant. I think there probably is a massive cataclysmic event coming, in which case I think that's
our moment.
The possibility
really. that's what I'm hanging on for,
who care about the world. I think, you know, if you care about the world and want the world to still be here, then kind of blatant capitalism has to
kind of what Starmer's offering, which is a kind of managerial, which is to manage capitalism a little bit better. You know, that's not going to fucking work either. No, I think, but it's true. A Mad Max dystopia is really our best bet. Really.
But, you know, it's lovely to hear it discussed on a podcast. And whether you agree with it or not, I hope people will listen, because I think it's, and I don't agree with you about everything, I have to say, but you know, what would the world be if we did? But, you know, it's great to hear that being discussed openly without, you know, I think that is the problem. A lot of those ideas don't even get through to people's conscious anymore. And they can get through to people and then they can go, I don't think that's going to work.
Absolutely, and it's
not. It's hard to even hear them. So there we go.
Yeah.
But let's talk, in our remaining time, let's talk about, I mean, looking through your career as a whole, it's very interesting, I think, once you get to probably a certain point beyond sort of 60 and you can look back at the whole spread of someone's career and what they've done. But you, Michael Palin was my first guest I had in 2020, and you're practically my last guest of 2020. And very similarly, you've both kind of achieved so much in so many different disciplines over all that time, because you've been an author, and you've been a film star, you've been a stand-up, you've been a TV actor, you've been into politics, and you've kind of done well at all these different things. Do you look back at your career and think I've had an amazing life. I hope there's still another 20 or 30 years to go of work, Alexei. But if there's not, do you look back at it and do you look back and think this is amazing, or do you feel that rug got pulled out from under your feet a little bit, maybe? And
well, it's complicated, isn't it? To navigate as you know, really, to navigate a career in show business and to sort of remain in it and to not fall down, you know, one of those holes that are waiting for you is really difficult, I think, to not collapse into, you know, kind of just doing the same thing over and over again because it worked for you in the 80s becoming right wing and doing, you know, the Raw Variety Show and getting an MBE or some shit like that, and hanging around with, I don't know. Was it, there's a picture of Chris Evans for some reason on this. Are you putting that up, or is it?
It's another Chris Evans. It's called, that's
on my screen. It's a different Chris Evans. Oh, right.
It's not that one.
I thought.
It's all right.
I'm blind. I thought you were.
Don't worry about him. He's just lurking there.
But I mean, that, you know, just that kind of, you know, that just becoming another just falling down that celebrity kind of hole, you know, to navigate a way through that and to find a way artistically to, you know, to find new find a way to remain original, I think is a immensely difficult challenge. I think that most people don't make it, really.
But then you have made it, I think, don't you? I mean, I think that's what's you moved it towards more novel books and novels for a little while, but which is still a very interesting and very difficult thing to achieve what you've achieved in. And you know, now you're back doing stand-up. But yeah, to stay relevant in stand-up, because you couldn't come back and just do the same.
No,
it couldn't
absolutely.
Be the same. You know, no. And also it wouldn't work as a man in his 20s and a man in his 60s. No. You can't do the same sort of material anyway. So it is about reinvention. And I think that, you know, I sort of feel lucky that, and for me and Stu, I think that we weren't more successful. We could have got more success and we could have fallen down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And as a result, we've been forced into doing stuff that's sort of more interesting.
Well, you both had your wilderness years, haven't you,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, I think sometimes people with me think that it was, you know, I think there was years when I felt very much out of fashion, you know, and kind of disregarded, really, which is a difficult experience, but it's also, you know, if you cope with it in the right way, is eventually if you can come out the other end, I think is, you know, it teaches you what's important, you know, for you as a performer, really, I think.
But I think also, like, it's the acting part of your career is really interesting, because you've been in, like, Hollywood blockbusters. I wanted to talk to you about Siesta, which all it says on your website is this really, really bad movie. I don't remember Siesta.
Oh, man.
I didn't see that. But do you? What was Siesta that all you said, this is a, you say with Carry On Columbus, I'll never understand what possessed me to do
what
this.
The fuck I was thinking
but
there.
But Siesta, you just go, this is a really, really bad movie.
Well, I think that, yeah, I mean, my acting career is I feel kind of ambiguous about it, because I have tremendous admiration for actors. I think it's a really difficult thing to do. The one thing actors can't do is do stand-up, really, or even successfully play stand-ups. There's no time when an actor has ever successfully, you know, and there was a fashion a few years ago for, you know, to do the lives of, you know, Tony Hancock and people like that. And if an actor was doing it, it always, the stand-up part of it always, and actually even the other bit of it, always seemed completely false, really. Because I think a stand-up has to play a stand-up, really. And one of the best films about stand-up is actually Adam Sandler's Funny People, got Adam Sandler as a kind of slightly older comic, and then the younger generation, Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, people like that. And they just, it's about the love that comedians have for each other, but also the kind of, you know, competitive spirit as well. Anyway, so I think that my acting career, that I never took it quite seriously enough. I never tried hard enough. I never, if anybody's thinking now about like auditioning, I'd never learn me lines for the audition. I'd never, yeah. I was vaguely, I mean, David Brennick in the podcast, Renwick, you see, I still get it wrong. You know, tells when I went to audition or meet them for Whoops Apocalypse, and I told them I hadn't read the script, so I hadn't got to my bit. I mean, that was typical of me, really. And I think in retrospect, I never really got to be, in something where which really played to my strengths, that I never got to be in a hit, really.
I mean Indiana Jones did all right,
yeah, but it was yeah, it was okay, but I wasn't,
but
I was
like, even to get to that level where, and you know, then it may not be like a lot of big standout starring roles, but to get to that point where you're being cast in movies and living that life, because it's interesting, isn't it, to mix.
Yeah.
I find that interesting, of you being put in a mix with Harrison Ford and,
yeah,
you know, sitting in a canteen with him, which I'm sure, I don't know if that kind of thing happens.
The first thing Harrison Ford said to me when I met him in Spain was, he said, I'm a huge fan of yours.
Right.
And I thought to myself, what fucking use is that to me? How is that going to help me? You know? But I mean, yeah, I took too many films, I think, because I fancied the holiday you know, and I didn't really, I wasn't strategic about my acting career. And so to get back to Siesta is Siesta is an extraordinary film. It's got an amazing cast in it. It's got Ellen Barkin, Gabriel Byrne, Grace Jones, Isabella Rossellini, Martin Sheen, Julian Temple, and Jodie Foster.
Okay.
And me. And as each of them had their name taken off the poster, I kind of went up the ranking until it was Un film de Alexis Sale. It's about It's where Ellen Barkin actually met and then subsequently married Gabrielle Byrne as well. And it was directed by a woman who had done the Madonna videos, like she did Material World and stuff like that, Mary Lambert. And then after that, the best film she could get was Pet Sematary 2. It was an amazingly pretentious film about, it was based on a novel. And it was about a woman who wakes up on the edge of an airfield in Spain. And she doesn't know how she got there. And it turns out she's this kind of stunt woman who does these kind of evil Knievel stunts. And then she reconstructs her last few days. Well, and it turns out that she'd been dead all along. But I'm a Madrid taxi driver who's also kind of doubling as the angel of death. And as I said in the podcast, I actually can remember my lines in Spanish, but I'd learned them from an Argentinian friend of mine. And what I didn't know was that kind of the Argentinian accent is a kind of ridiculous accent. Again, it's a lack of research, really. So I Ellen Barkin gets in my cabin, I say, Te puedo llevar al centro, pero se cobra más. Los Domingos is, I can take it to the centre if it costs more on Sunday. And it got, my line got massive. And then I turned, and then in English I say to her, you got money? You got money? And it was at a screening and it got a huge laugh and it is not a comedy. And it's just the most extraordinarily pretentious film that you could have. It's worth, there's bits of it, I think, on YouTube. It's worth seeing, really. Everybody thought that they were Fellini, really, and they were making this masterpiece, and it was just nonsense. But it's worth, you know, it was an interesting interlude, you know.
Yeah, but also it's just, I think it's, out of all the people who end up acting, I know, like, I suppose Omid Jalili's a little bit similar, you know, he's sort of plucked out of stand-up to be,
he's much better
in lots
at
of films.
Than me. Well, acting,
he's very, he's not, really, really good, but yeah. It's a person you can't, and he's a very sort of gregarious person. I'm sure he's lovely to have on set, but it's something you can't imagine him mixing with the people he's mixing. If you know him socially, you go, that's not the person I expect to be plucked out and put in Hollywood films. It's kind of, it's, you know, it's great though, just to see both of you in those films.
Yeah. No, I think Omid has made a much better fist of acting, really, than I did, really. But when people ask me who would play me in the movie, I always say Omid, really. But also, there's, you know, he tells me, you know, I was friendly with Robin Williams, really, and wrote various obituaries for him. But Omid said every time he met Robin, Robin would say, oh, it's really great to see you again, Alexei.
Yeah, I'd like to see the challenge of Omid having to play you, I have to say. I'm sure he could do it, but... You're quite different personality types.
Yes, indeed.
We have looked, there's been a lot of comedy deaths in the last 6 or 7 years. Since I last talked to you, we've lost a lot of really big names, and this year we've lost a few more. It's odd, like some, you know, Nicholas Parsons is 95, Rick Mayall obviously in his 50s still. Mortality something that occupies your thoughts
every single second, every minute.
Just for me.
Yeah, it's not something I've worked out a kind of relaxed attitude to, really. Oblivion. No, it's aging, and you know, that's another challenge, really, is aging. And again, I mean, the martial arts is very good for making you supple, keeping you, you know, I mean, a lot of the masters in Tai Chi are in their 80s and 90s, right. You know, and they, you know, they pull trucks around with their penises and stuff like that. It's something I'm hoping to do in the next tour.
I'm hoping you're going to keep going. You've lost your sense of smell, lost your sense of sight. Okay. Your kind of senses come and go, but hopefully they'll keep coming back again. But, you know, I think there's not many comedians, I guess, who push through, or certainly interesting comedians. Comedians either die like ridiculously young, or get into like their mindset and a set. I think it'd be great to see you in your 80s still doing stuff. Do you think you will want to do that?
Or maybe, if I'm still going, then yes. I mean, I think that you know, I am thrilled to have found a way to return to stand-up in a way that I am very proud of, you know, and also to have kind of located both, to have satisfied both an older audience, but also to have, you know, that there's a lot of young people who also, you know, are interested in what I do and stuff. And it is, I feel a tremendous sense of satisfaction for having done that, really, that the staff, you know, and also I should mention the Imaginary Sandwich Bar as well. That is a massive, you know, is a very successful show on Radio 4, and it's something that I'm intensely proud of. You know, I think it's, I mean, God bless John and William for asking me to do it, really. But it came together right away, that show, and I think it's brilliant. I mean, I do think it's really good, and I love. It's not. You know, it's an evolution for me. It's not shouty like I used to be, you know, but it's I think it retains the best of what I had when I was younger, but I had something more complex and self-doubting and more humane now, I think, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because there's now so many outlets for comedy, and obviously even more so when you were on TV and when I was on TV, you know, there's three or four channels, and if you were lucky, or, you know, maybe a couple of radio show stations you might get on, but basically you were, you know, if you didn't get that bit lucky break, then that was it. But now you seem to be exploring like stage, radio, which is, you know, as long as you've got an outlet to do it, it doesn't really matter how big it is, because everything's so spread out now that there's nothing's huge, and you know it's very difficult.
Well, that's one of the
TV,
you know. Here. I mean, I did. You know, I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, when I came back to comedy, you know, it was like I had to accept was that I'm not. You know, when it the first time around, it was like you could be more or less the king. Right? There was only like five of us out there, really, yeah. And you could, you know, you could be that competitive that you could be. You could see yourself as being the best, really. I mean, now, you know, when I came back in like 2011, 2012, you know, I just kind of accepted that I'm just some other bloke out there, really. You know, I can't hope to be the king of it anymore. But, you know, that's kind of fine, really.
Yeah, but then I think, so it's in, to me, it's interesting. The bike ride thing, I think, is really interesting. The podcast is interesting. The sandwich bar is great. They're all different areas.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, but it's just you expressing yourself in different ways. And so that, I think that's what's amazing about the internet. You know, I think, I honestly think that bike show could be a TV show and might be a TV show, but it would never actually, if you took that into a TV company 15 years ago, they'd have told you to say, but actually you do it and it's good, and it wouldn't matter if you just did it yourself.
But I suppose that's the other thing, that the kind of things in a way that kind of dies in you is that ambition, really. I mean, it's not, you know, I don't care if it's a TV show or not, really. No. I mean, it'd be nice. Be great.
Well, I hope not. I hope my stone clearing's never made into a TV show. But, you know, that's.
But it's also
so sometimes things are just what they are. You know, things that to take it anywhere else would certainly change stone clearing, but it might work, but it might not. But it's there for its own sake, and people will find it, and people will enjoy it. And
is it
already, you know,
Stonyfield
I'm just trying to clear one to start with, and then I'll move on to the rest. There's only about a billion stones on it. It's 35 acres, so I've managed to. I've been doing it for 2.5 years, and you wouldn't know. So it might take me the rest of my life.
You have to dig them up. They're not sort of lying around there.
They're lying on top, but there's just an awful lot of them. I'm trying to build a wall that will be visible from space around the edge of the field. But it's a big field, Alexei, and, you know, I'm only one man.
You've heard of that.
But maybe the future generations of herrings will finish the...
You are literally Sisyphus. You don't take it down at night again, like, put all the stones back.
Who knows?
Probably
I might be doing
Stu,
that.
Stu is probably coming around at night and putting them back.
I don't mind. I like doing it anyway, so it's okay. He's only helping me if he does that. It's all really interesting. I hope people will check out your podcast, which is you're going to get. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there, and it's beautifully produced as well. Your producer is great.
This
out. Do check that out. And will you go back on the road with a different show, or will you try and complete your tour in 2021, if possible.
I'll go out and talk about how angry I am about the result of the 2019 election. Wouldn't that be great?
I mean, you might not remember by then.
I'm so angry. The bloody 2019 election. I'll be shouting about Rory Stewart. People are like, who? Who gives a fuck? I mean, now I think that... I mean, who knows now? It's all up in the air, really. I mean, I'm doing another series, The Absence of Normal, my Radio 4 kind of drama, short story series that goes out in March. And there's another series of Imaginary Sandwich Bar, which will be in November, probably. And, that's being commissioned. And, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, hopefully we'll have reached some kind of stability by then. And so, but yeah, I think that also, it depends. I mean, again, you know, it depends on, I suppose, what your position is after this is over, really, whether the pack's been shuffled and whether people are still interested in what you've got to say. I think it'll be an interesting time, kind of post, you know. I mean, people are playing. I noticed that idea of people, are, you know, that idea of that it'll be the Roaring Twenties. That will be a time of kind of bacchanalian orgy once we come out of this, and then followed by,
fingers crossed.
Yeah, but dancing dancing the Charleston on top of taxi cabs in Times Square. But then it'll be followed by this kind of catastrophic economic crash, a depression, yes. Really.
Do you have any predictions for January the 1st? Behind me, on the, I should say, is what I think the UK will be like. People are going to be listening to this from somewhere like the 6th of January, I think it goes out. So on the 6th of January, how do you think the UK will be, and what do you think we'll have achieved? It's insane that we're talking 2 weeks away and we don't know whether there's going to be a deal or not. Do you think there'll be a deal?
I think it's all going to be fine.
Boris Johnson, yeah. At least Keir Starmer's not in charge.
He's
not. As long as Boris is
he's not what you think. He's working it out. It's like a... Well, again, Jerry, you shouldn't have fucking listened to Jeremy. Jeremy, you would have had a soft Brexit. You would have had a customs union. If fucking Starmer and all those other bastards hadn't stabbed him in the back, he would have had a soft Brexit and everything would have been fixed by now, and your fucking camembert would have been safe, you middle-class wankers. Like Starmer, it was Starmer with his second referendum who knocked everything
Well, we
up.
Could lay the blame at a lot of doors, and ultimately at our own, I think, possibly.
Well, yeah, we're all responsible. We're all guilty. We're all steeped in sin. Now, it'll all be fine. That's my prediction.
It'll be fine.
It'll be great.
It'll be like
I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen, to be honest.
There's not many lettuce, apparently. Lettuce and broccoli.
Yeah,
I'm very upset about
Linda
the broccoli.
Just went to Waitrose and it's stripped bare. It's literally, there was nothing. There was no fresh fruit. There was no meat.
Right.
There was no pasta, of course.
It's Christmas. That might be Christmas.
No, I think it was panic buying. I'm looking forward to it. One of my hobbies is eating, you know, eating stuff that's incredibly out of date. Because if I find like a chutney at the back of the cupboard that's like, you know, I mean, I don't think I've eaten anything mostly this century, you know, from 2000, you know.
20s.
Yeah, but, you know, so I'm looking forward to eating all them chutneys. I've been for, you know, like, that you got, you know, somebody gave you as a present, ginger and date chutney. Malcolm's ginger and date chutney, and it's, you know, best before June 1998. I'm really looking forward to being forced to eat that.
As well.
Yeah, eh?
Yeah. There's a lot of things in our freezer that my wife keeps on, you know, putting out leftovers in the freezer, and we never unfreeze them and eat them again.
It's going to be
going to come out on there, but some of them are probably 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah. No, you're going to be.
Anyway, it's good to have a hobby, Lexi. It's good. That's.
Yeah.
I like doing Chinese martial arts and eating outdoor food.
We could do a whole. Maybe I'll do a podcast about best before, you know, my.
I'm interested. It's used by and best before. They're very different.
Linda brought me a sandwich before, BLT, £3 reduced to 89p. That's what I've had to eat for my tea so far. Okay, that's so cool. That's the other thing. I like to buy like a load of reduced to clear sandwiches and then lay them out on a platter as if I'm having a meeting.
It's good. Well, I've got a very lovely image to end the podcast on of what is to come for the comedian and his as he approaches 70. I'm approaching 60.
Yeah.
We'll see how it's going. Good. It's fantastic to talk to you again, Alexei. I hope I will talk to you again before the next 6 or 7 years. But good luck with the podcast. Do all tune into the podcast. My next week guest is Catherine Boha on the 30th. I've recording on the 30th. I'll be out in a week's time if you listen to the podcast. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Alexei Sale, what an absolute hero, legend in every sense. Thanks very much, Alexei. Goodbye. I've been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Alexei Sale. Thank you to Pest, who provide the music for this audio podcast. I would also like to thank our researcher, Kathleen McKeegan, who does the fantastic Rahulastapa, rahulastapa.com website, where you can find out more than you need to know about this podcast, but it's very useful for me to research guests we've already seen. Thank you. I'm indebted, of course, to my producer and friend and director, Chris Evans, not that one. Also, thanks to everyone at Acast and British Comedy Guide and Ian Tunes for keeping us going. Thanks to everyone who's a badger and everyone who's subscribed on Twitch using your Amazon Prime account to give us free money. It's an amazing thing. Please do it if you can. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. GoFasterStripe.com/badges if you want to get loads of backstage extras, loads of extra interviews, loads of extra cool videos, stand-up shows, membership card, secret code, badges, ad-free podcasts. The lot, my fine friends. Why not give it a fine go? Now, fuck off and leave me alone, because I got stuff to do. I'm not just doing this for your entertainment, you know? Bye!
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.